Welcome to another episode of La Storia Podcast. I'm your host, Santina Giannino. Today's guest is Joe Small, my first guest to also have a stage name, Joe Collymore. I met Joe recently through a mutual friend, Realta, when I staged this condo in Hull with amazing views of Nantasket Beach. It didn't take long during a meeting to realize that Joe has a very interesting story to share, one of my favorite, self-reinvention. After retiring from a very successful career in technology, Joe decided to go into acting, producing, and doing voiceover work. He's a member of the Screen Actors Guild and has recently received the Providence College Martin Luther King Vision Award. Can't wait for Joe to share his story with us. Hi, Joe. Welcome to my fifth episode of La Storia Podcast. I'm really excited that you're here today to share your life journey.
Well, thank you, Santina. It's a pleasure to be here, and I must confess that my life's journey doesn't seem that impressive, but it's my life's journey. So for what it's worth, I invite your listeners to enjoy.
Well, since we don't know each other that well, we just met recently when I stayed at your beautiful condo. I did some research, and your life journey is pretty incredible from what I found out. So I can't wait for you to share it with the listeners. So let's start with where you grew up. I know you grew up in Duxbury, so you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Certainly. I am from Duxbury. I am the oldest of six. My mom and dad, they're from Boston. They went to the Boston Public Schools, and then when they got married and started the family, immediately moved us south to Duxbury, because my father, when he was a teenager, his aunt lived in Duxbury, and he would travel down during summers and holidays to work on his aunt's cranberry bog.
Wow.
So he was very familiar with the community. He knew that's where he wanted to start his family. And so I think I might have been around maybe 1.5, 2 years old when mom and dad packed me up and off we went south. And that's all that I've ever known is Duxbury. However, my mom is one of 15.
Oh my gosh.
So, and dad himself was one of six. And so they come from a very large family, large extended family, of which when you can appreciate when I say to you, I am one of 60 grandchildren. I have 54 first cousins just on my mother's side.
Oh, my goodness.
And we all know each other. We know each other by first name, but don't ask me to name the names of their children and their grandchildren because it's just too many.
Wow. I can imagine like what a wedding must be like.
It's like limited to plus one, if even that, for sure.
Wow, I come from a big family. I'm one of seven, so yeah, which is kind of not today's lifestyle, you know. But it's nice that you have a big family. So it sure is.
We were fortunate in that my dad was a self-made entrepreneur.
Yes.
He started out as a mechanical engineer for Raytheon, and I guess maybe 10 years with them, he was encouraged and supported to start his own company. And he started a high-precision tool and die company, starting in the basement of our home in Duxbury.
Wow.
6 months later, mom said, it's time to move your business out if you're going to start a second shift, and we've got strangers coming through the bulkhead door to work on machines at night. Time to grow and get out. So he moved the business to Rockland, Massachusetts.
Right down the street.
And the name of the company is Small Trend Engineering at that time when he started that business. So we all took turns helping dad in one form or another, whether it was learning how to read blueprints, learning how to sweep the shop floor. Eventually with the boys, I have three brothers and two sisters. And as boys, we were all taught how to run certain machines without hurting ourselves or anyone else, at that for that matter. Yeah. So it's an honorable and unfortunately fleeting profession when you're talking about machinists, high precision tool and die. A lot of that kind of work is now overseas. We don't see much of that in our current generation of kids coming through the trades.
Wow, so the company kind of just...
It is very much a small fraction of what it was once was. It's now greatly reduced down to just two employees who operate, pretty much run their business by themselves. And we do have some steady customers who appreciate the work that they're still capable of doing. And that includes the likes of National Grid, Eversource, and Shea Precast. Wow. So
the business is still in the family?
The business is still in the family, although it's known by a different name now. It's JS Products LLC, so it is an LLC of our siblings and I who are the beneficiary operators. But essentially, the business exists for keeping these two longtime employees going.
That's great. That's great. Great history. So when I came to look at your condo for the staging, one of the things that I remember is that there was a very small painting that said, "The Small Estate." And I said, "Oh, what's that?" So you want to tell us a little story about it? Because
certainly.
I found that like really interesting.
It's an artifact from days long past, which is our homestead in Duxbury. As I shared, my dad, being an entrepreneur, we were fortunate enough where over a period of time, Dad acquired adjoining pieces of land so that we went from a homestead of 10 acres to a larger homestead of 110 acres in West Duxbury.
Yeah.
We would call it the Sticks. It borderlined Marshfield and Pembroke.
Okay.
But it was a lot of space for my brothers and I, and my sisters for that matter, to really stretch out. We would hunt and fish. We were fortunate enough to have a stream and a pond nearby. We were fortunate enough to just go and light hunting without, you know, whether it was pheasant hunting or what have you. And we would go and we'd be able to cut our own Christmas trees.
Wow.
And we were fortunate enough to have some horses as well. So a lot of room to do lots of stuff. And eventually when my mom decided to sell the property because no one else wanted to come back home and run it, and it takes a lot of effort if you can imagine 110 acres.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's full time.
It is. Oftentimes you would have to run trappers. There were people who were coming onto the property and, you know, trapping mink and things of that nature, which was too dangerous for some of the younger kids. You don't want them getting injured by traps in the brooks and streams. And so when it came time to sell, the realtor had an artist sort of paint this rendition of the homestead, which is what you saw. Now, that painting is now in my sister's home, my youngest sister's home in Birmingham, Alabama.
I sent it to her.
Yes, I did. I sent it to her, and she really appreciated it too.
Good. I'm glad that it found a home.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sure. I would have relocated someplace too. I was surprised when it wasn't there when I went back to the stage. But I do remember the story, and I thought that was very interesting. So you talk about your dad, and want to tell us a little bit about your mom?
Sure. Again, she's one of 15. She is no longer with us, but she's been gone now about 3 years. She in herself was very much a professional businesswoman. She had she went to school to become a cosmetologist.
Wow.
And if you can imagine raising a young family in our home, Dad was able to build an addition to the house, which served as her salon.
Wow.
And so she was doing several customers' hair as part of her business. And that was until maybe my sisters were born, because they were the last two to come along. So yeah, four boys, keep them outside, keep them busy.
Yeah.
Then the two girls came along, and that's when Mom said, okay, you know, I'm done with that type of work. And she wanted to spend more time raising her girls. And from there, she went back to school, and she studied accounting. And went on to become the bookkeeper for a Ford dealership in Marshfield and worked there for so many years that eventually she went on to become the general manager of that Ford dealership.
That's incredible. Even back then.
Yeah, even back then, right. Wow. And she worked at that dealership until it, you know, the owners retired and they sold the dealership and she decided she wanted to do something else. And so she then went to work for AFSCME. That's the American Federation of County, State, and Municipal Employees, AFSCME.
It's a mouthful.
Yes, it is a mouthful. And that essentially is it's a union of county and municipal and state employees. And she worked in the Massachusetts AFSCME office as one of their financial specialists and helped with managing their books.
Wow.
And she did that until she finally retired.
Wow. Now I can see where you got your inspiration to do so much with your life, huh?
They rarely...
You really had good teachers.
They didn't suffer idleness lightly. No, if you're sitting around with nothing to do, I'll find something for you to do, was what my mom and dad would always say.
Good. Yeah. There's nothing better than, you know, just keep on trying new things and get involved with whatever you can,
Yes.
The more you do, the more you learn, right? Even when you don't think that you're learning, you're still learning.
That is so true.
Even if you learn to fail, you're still learning.
Well, you know,
it's a great lesson to learn to fail.
I've come to really embrace this concept of being a lifelong learner. It sounds kind of corny, but if you really think about it, you want to always stay active in terms of learning new things. The brain is like a muscle, and if it's not used, then it gets lazy, and then you begin to have real problems as you get older. So if you try to challenge yourself to learn new things, try new things, even as you begin to age gracefully, the hope is that you have a really good chance of having at least a strong mindset.
Yeah, which brings me to why I was so interested in having you as my guest, because you really reinvented yourself when you retired. And it's one of the things that really interests me about people, which is one of the reasons why I really started this podcast, because everybody that I interview, it's really like an entrepreneur, or they just, you know, self-reinvented themselves. And so they have a great story to tell, you know. So I know that you went to... Providence College.
Yes.
English major.
Yes, yes.
With a minor in computers. So
yes.
We have that in common. You don't know
right.
That.
No, I did not.
No.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a degree in computer science. So my previous life was IT.
Oh, my goodness. Did you also have the deck that you had to feed into a card reader? Or no? See, now I'm dating myself.
No, I think you
had keyboards back then.
Yeah.
We had punch cards.
Data processing. Just starting,
Yeah, my first exposure was, you got to make sure you get the code right. Otherwise, all that hard work you put into the program, if it doesn't run, you got to start all over again. Figure out where you went wrong.
Yeah.
But I really was so appreciative of the opportunity at Providence College when they opened up their computer science department to those who wanted to take it as an elective. And that's what I chose to do. I said, geez, you know what? I'm curious about this, and let's give it a try and see what happens. And so I was fortunate enough to be given that opportunity to take a couple of computer programming classes there. And it was just the kind of thing that helped me secure my first job in this industry, this growing industry of computer-assisted instruction. So my background, when you compare having the English major. I did some teaching while I was in college during the summers, working in the East Providence schools as a teaching intern.
Yeah.
And it was that experience that I had an opportunity to work with a new emerging technology called computer-assisted instruction, which was actually an outgrowth of the University of Illinois. I think Stanford University was also involved, and they had gotten National Science Foundation grants to explore how computers could be used to teach. Computer-assisted instruction, computer-based training, those were all terms that were being developed back in the late 60s and early 70s. And so by the time I came along in the 1975-76 timeframe, Controlled Data Corporation was one of those large mainframe computer manufacturers who were supporting some of this early work that was being developed at these universities, like the University of Illinois at Urbana had developed the PLATO system, P-L-A-T-O, and that system was built on the Control Data mainframes. So when Control Data made a decision to take this emerging technology and now let's see if it had real commercial applications outside of the university environment, I was one of a few new hires who were asked to look into certain markets to see if there was real interest. And I had the opportunity to work in a group called Government Systems Marketing, which was a division within Control Data Corporation that worked in support of DOD, Department of Defense.
Okay.
Some of their equipment was being used for defense systems, but then this new emerging PLATO system was being looked at as how can it help in education applications within the Department of the Army.
And look at what it is today, huh?
Very much so. But back then, if you think about it, we had stopped the draft in 1973. We had a volunteer army and lots of kids who were going into the Army because they didn't have many options. Some of them were high school dropouts.
Yeah.
And some of them got in trouble with the law, and the judge would say, either you go in the Army or you go to jail. It's your choice.
Wow.
So you had a lot of kids going in who were then going through basic training and were struggling readers. And we had an opportunity to demonstrate how we could use these instructional computers in place of community college professors to help these kids with remediating their math and reading skills.
Oh, wow.
And because it was self-paced and because it was individualized, these kids were able to move through relatively quickly, achieve a GED, and then go through what was called their ASVAB, which was getting their military occupational specialties, and then off they went with their careers in the armed services.
Wow, that's incredible.
Cool stuff.
Really pioneer, huh?
Very pioneering. And the applications continue to evolve. If you remember when the Japanese auto manufacturers started selling Toyotas and and the like here in the United States.
I came here as 16 years old, so
okay.
My background's a little different. I don't know a lot of stuff.
So back in the early 80s,
yeah.
The big three American automobile manufacturers, Ford, Chrysler, and General Motors, started to get real serious competition from the Japanese auto manufacturers.
Okay.
And the competition was driven by the ability of the Japanese to produce cars cheaper with some degree of reliability compared to the American automakers.
Okay.
And the reason why they were able to do it is because they were using robotics.
Okay.
They were using robots to do spot welding and robots to do painting and things of that nature. And as a result, and you could run more work shifts with fewer humans to produce the welding and the paint shops, for starters. So Unimate was a robot manufacturing company that began to say to the American manufacturers, hey, you know, you should be doing the same thing the Japanese are doing. And they did. Problem was, in this country, we had unions. And when you bring a robot on to replace a human, now you got a problem. And the unions were saying, listen, if you're going to replace our workers, you should retrain the ones that you're displacing.
Makes sense.
And so roughly one third of the automobile laborer who was displaced by a robot was given an opportunity to be retrained. And we at Control Data Corporation had the opportunity to do the retraining of that employee.
Gee, you got involved with that too, huh?
Using the same technology. Using the same technology, all right?
Wow.
Again, you've got a high school graduate, maybe at best. He's been working 10 years for General Motors, maybe in the paint shop or maybe in the welding shop.
Yeah.
Now they have to learn a new skill. And we're going to train them how to be a robotics repair technician.
Wow.
Now, you first got to start with, let's address your reading and your math skills. Make sure you're good and strong there. And then once you get there, and then we'll introduce you to drives, servo systems, and then go from servo systems to pneumatics, and then going from pneumatics to robotics.
Wow.
And introductory. And we taught them how to program robotics, and we taught them how to service robots. And they went from making, let's say, I don't know, at that time, let's say $15 an hour in the paint shop. Now they're a robotics repair service technician and they're making $35 to $50 an hour.
Wow.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That was really, made us feel really good about helping these individuals, you know, stay in the industry and make even more money.
That's excellent. So I want to go back to Providence College.
Okay.
So I know that this year, 2022, you just received the Martin Luther King Vision Award.
I did.
So tell us a little bit about that and what brought that recognition on you. What did you do?
What did I do? Oh, gosh. What did I do? I have to ponder that. Well,
I was looking at the list of the people for 2022, and I noticed there were young people.
Yes.
So recent graduates.
Who are doing some really cool stuff.
Yes. Well, it was like, what got them to go back?
I think, first off, I'm not the only one as an alum of Providence College to get that kind of recognition. A very dear friend of mine, Reggie Nunnally, who was also a member of my class of 1974 at Providence College, received same recognition several years ago by the school.
Okay.
I believe that each year, I think somewhere between two and four are chosen to recognize them for work they're doing or have done in the area of some things that Martin Luther King Jr. stood for. In my particular case, it was around really social justice with respect to equal opportunity. When you heard me share some of my experiences in this industry, if there's one common element, it's all about equal opportunity, closing the gap.
Yeah. Lola. She wants to join us.
I hear you. So, following along in those experiences, Providence College felt that some of the work that I had been doing, dating back to the 70s, through the 80s, through the 90s, even into the 2000s, the key focus has been around education opportunities and closing the gap as it relates to education opportunities. So they felt that some of the work that I had done, like putting educational technologies into migrant education camps so that families who were moving and migrating during the harvest and growing seasons from one town to the next, why should their children suffer and have to experience a gap in their education if you can move the technology with them? And so those were some of the things that we promoted.
All right. So the next thing that I want to talk about is your self reinvention. Oh. So you retired.
I did.
And then you went into modeling, voiceover, producing, acting. So what made you decide to do that? Like,
I have always loved the performing arts. And if I perhaps were not the oldest of six, with parents who had expectations that go and get a real job, so to speak, I probably would have maybe chosen a path that would have had me going from high school right into theater arts.
Really?
Really. However,
so I would have been in the movies by now.
Maybe or not.
At least TV.
Who knows? But I always loved supporting the arts. My son, who turns 26, who learned to play the piano at 3, himself was on stage when he was 5, who today is a college graduate with a degree in music composition and music technology, and he's teaching music. Wow. And he performs in a band, and I'm so proud of him. As I am of my daughter, who is a nurse.
Yeah.
But all to say, when I retired from this work that I have been doing for over 40 years in education, education publishing, education technology, and education advocacy, I knew I didn't want to just sit and watch the news. Mm-hmm. So in 2018, when this retirement took place, I thought to myself, what do I want to do next? And I couldn't help but want to look back at what's my passion, and the passion was performing arts. Mm-hmm. So what did I do? I joined a local theater arts group. We did a couple of live theater performances, like Arthur Miller's The Price, like Lynn Nottage's Sweat. And from there, I guess you could say the bug took place.
Okay.
And so from doing live theater to I did some photo shoots. Someone felt that, you know, I perhaps would do well as a mature model for health care shoots. So you'll see my image on brochures that might be in a doctor's office, promoting awareness for pre-diabetes screening. I was told that once someone saw my image at Tufts Medical Center, promoting joint replacements and things of that nature. I did a Blue Cross Blue Shield commercial that ran for a couple of years. And so it's been a great experience in that respect. And then I went and attended a meetup at our local community access television studio in Hingham.
Okay.
And was sitting in the meeting, and the studio executive said, "You got a really nice voice." And I had done radio in college. And he said, "Have you ever thought about doing public service announcements?" And I said, "No, what do you need?" And I volunteered to do PSAs, and before you know it, they're asking me to do some more things. And then finally they said, "Hey, you know what? I think you're a natural to just sit in front of the camera and just do the news and do other stuff." And so there I was doing other stuff, and doing some of the other stuff has now evolved into producing. I've produced a number of special interest pieces, historical pieces, and most recently we completed a short documentary of which I was a contributing producer, that looked at the dangers of vaping or e-cigarettes and its adverse effects on young people's lungs.
Wow.
And we didn't realize that during this pandemic, our young people who have been isolated, many of them actively addicted to vaping, e-cigarettes, and damaging themselves. And we met a young man who was the unfortunate victim of a bad vaping experience that resulted in him undergoing a double lung transplant.
Wow, really? I think I saw something on TV actually about that, yes.
I mean, he is still with us today. He's on medications for the rest of his life. Many of his dreams as a young, robust young man who aspired to join the Navy, be an underwater diver, unfortunately will not be realized, but he is lucky enough to be alive where some young people were not, and they perished as a result of damaging their lungs.
And they were introduced as something so...
Oh, yeah.
Better for you.
Yes.
You don't want to smoke cigarettes. This is...
Yeah, this is sexier. This is really cool. And they hired all of these Hollywood actors and music people to promote how really neat it was. But actually, it really isn't neat at all.
Doesn't surprise me, though. It's always... That's how always things turn out. Well, so that's quite a bit.
It's enough to...
That you...
Again, it's all about just having fun while you
live.
Yeah, and just be a lifelong learner. Always stay open-minded to what can you learn new to hopefully do no harm and hopefully help somebody along the way.
Yeah, that's key. That's key. So now you're going through another change.
I am.
I am.
As they say, when you get to a certain age, you begin to, as they say, declutter and downsize.
I have to declutter.
Yes, you did indeed. Thank you so much. I never imagined how much. I never considered myself a hoarder.
Nobody is.
But like, But like, who needs X number of shoes? Why so many hats and ball caps?
God,
like, no, you don't need that. Yes, exactly. Like. So I now want to travel. I want to continue to do some of the things that I'm doing, including freelance digital production of some new interesting pieces, while at the same time spending more opportunities with my growing granddaughters who are out in the Midwest. So I've got both my kids now in the Midwest, and so looking forward to spending more time traveling between St. Louis and Pittsburgh, and then, of course, still enjoying summers here down on the South Shore. I just can't imagine.
Oh, you're coming back.
I still have family here. I have a sister and a brother who live in this area. My other siblings are down south, but I can't imagine not being here at some point during the summer to enjoy our lobsters, our steamers, all that good stuff. But when it gets cold,
you're gone.
I'm like, don't look for me around here. No, I don't do winters so good anymore.
Okay, so it's not a permanent move, so you're not buying a place and staying stationary.
Not right now.
Trying to stay.
Yep.
More
stay loose.
Learning more.
Yep.
Finding out what you want to be when you grow up.
Just to certainly discover some new things, to enjoy just being able to travel.
Yeah.
You know, I used to have to travel for work constantly. Now to be able to travel because you want to see your loved ones and spend more time visiting with your loved ones. It's a whole different experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you a lot of luck.
Thank you.
I know that you're going to do great. I mean, with your background, I can imagine we're going to need another podcast to catch up.
And there's no reason why we can't. You know, what the real cool thing about podcasting, as you know, is you can do it from anywhere.
Exactly. Yeah.
And there's no reason why we can't perhaps in the future look at collaborating on future podcasts. Something that I might discover and say, Santina, you got to check this out. Okay.
Sounds
and,
good.
Here
to
we
me.
Go.
I look forward to it. Well, thank you for being here. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it too.
We'll talk soon.
Excellent.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.